1815, they set up what was called the Congress of Vienna. And this was an idea whereby they would try and set up a kind of world government then. And of course at this stage America was a very small nation. The real power was all France, England, Germany, and so they thought they could set that up and then absorb the rest of the world. But Russia stood in their way and they wouldn't have any of it. And that was when Nathan Rothschild swore to take revenge on the Tsar at the time, or his descendants, and he said that his descendants would have revenge on his descendants. And of course it was the Bolsheviks, which we just pointed out were crypto-Jews, that wiped out the Tsar and his family in 1917. Going over to the First World War, this was repeated when they tried to have set up the first United Nations, and this is what Benjamin Friedman talks about in his speech, in the early part of his speech that he was actually present at with Bernard Baruch.
That's right.
And he talks about the meetings he went to there, where again they tried to set up this essentially world government type of organisation under the it was a peace congress or something that was basically organized. Subsequently they didn't get what they wanted, but what they did get out of it was they got heavy reparations for Germany. And I think
they also got the Balfour signing, didn't they?
Yes, that's true, Darryl, but the Balfour signing was before the end of the war. The Balfour signing was basically to bring America into the war. And so it was a deal made between these Zionist Jews that were essentially American-based at the time, and they came over and said, right, we'll come into the war if you agree to sign Palestine over to us, which they did. And the Balfour Declaration is an interesting document to read because it states quite clearly within it that as a result of them having this land, then none of the existing population are to be disturbed or harmed or what have you. And of course, the complete opposite happened. But so what they did, the upshot was, I think that they tried to get this world government in place, they couldn't, and so they put the heavy reparations in on Germany, knowing that that would then lead to Germany having to at some point fight another war, and then they could get the rest through them, which essentially they did, but it hasn't moved as quickly as they hoped. And the rest that they got was the recognition of the State of Israel in 1947 after the end of the Second World War, and also the formation of the United Nations.
Well, but see, there's some parts missing. I'm going to fill in for the listener here. The 1917 failure in Russia came at the hands of these people, knowing full well that Germany had already weakened Russia, and there was already problems in many of the Western governments at the hands of the investments from the Zionist community, because they were playing chess with all of these governments. They were giving resources and then taking them away. They were financing, then not financing. They were building weaponry and then not building it. And of course, as they gave and took back these investments, they could function as a controller of how the war was going to come out. The ultimate goal being that Russia would fall as a power, which it did. It fell to the Marxist Mordecai Levy doctrine of communism, but also. There was an attack made on the caliphate of Turkey, which was actually the Ottoman Turk Empire, which they needed to implode in order to control Palestine as well. So they had two major empires in their sights when they went after World War I's conclusion, did they not?
They did, Darryl, and I'm pleased that you filled in those gaps. And there was even, I think, about the upshot of the war in Turkey, and they said that you could lay human hands running for miles of the sorts of people that had their hands cut off and all sorts at the behest of this group.
Yes, that happened in the Armenian slaughter. They ordered the slaughter through their Young Turk movement and then turned around and used the propaganda developed from it as a means of undermining the entire caliphate. You know, another false flag operation, which is what we see regularly with these people, including all the way up until today with the fraud that is terrorism. And I hear on almost every radio station in Islam these days talking about terrorism. I rarely hear the fraudulent nature of terrorism and how it was developed. What people need to understand about terrorism is that it is an idea that was developed in order to control the public in the West, so that they would get behind an attack on behalf of these criminals, so that each subsequent move politically by the West would give them more control over areas they did not already have in their hands. The last vestige in the world of freedom against these people has been Islam. And the reason why terrorism was developed was to pit Christianity against Islam in order to have them both fight till they were both exhausted and ultimately turn to these controllers and give them the entire world at their feet. Now, it's panning out that way in some ways, but they're also going to put in the mix here, Andrew, an economic implosion. But I digress here. Let's move on a little bit now to World War II, and let's discuss the dual funding here. We know that the Hitler group was funded through I.B. Farben, through the Harriman fortune in America, all subsets of the Rothschild Investment House.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, the I.G. Farben was very interesting, because that was a factory that was manufacturing a lot of these weapons and all sorts. And essentially, that was left untouched throughout the whole war, and it was sat right in the middle of an area that was bombed all around it. And you had Max Warburg not leaving Germany until 1944, so he wasn't rounded up and sent to any concentration camp. You had, interestingly, his brother financing the American war effort, Paul Warburg, in the United States. But one interesting thing that you said just then about terrorism is Menachem Begin, who was the would go on to be a future Prime Minister of Israel in 1946. He was asked by a journalist called Russell Warren Howe if he considered himself the father of terrorism in the Middle East. And Menachem Begin replied, no, in the entire whole world. And the title of my book being The Synagogue of Satan, in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, it actually states in the last days, beware of those who say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. It doesn't say beware of Islam or anything like this. And what we're being told now is Islam are responsible for terrorist acts through people like Osama bin Laden. But whenever you look into this, you can always find Zionism behind it. And I think that the reason that they're going after Islam now is that the true followers of Islam will not engage in usury, i.e. the lending of money at interest. And so they've got this big group out there that won't borrow money from them. And the reason that they've been able to enslave people over time has been to get them into debt. They make most of their money through getting countries into debt, but if they can get all their population into debt as well, then, you know, they've won the game. And so this is their last vestige that they're after, to try and crush this group, because they can't get them to go on with their debt-based policy.
Well, and you know, interesting that after the World War II here, many Jews are not aware, and if they were listening to the French Connection and to the conversations we've had, and Mohammed Rafik and Yaakov Zaki and many others, they would know clearly that they have been the group that has been most lied to. In World War II, many of the Germans, were not interested in going to Palestine in the 1930s. They didn't want to go to a desert strip of dirt in the Middle East. They were not from the Semitic culture. They were from the Khazari and Ashkenazi culture, and they were not interested in Talmudic tradition of this crime gang. They were more interested in a peaceful existence in some ways, and so they needed to be destroyed as well, because that was the opposition to Zionism. See, right within the community of Jews back in the 30s, the Zionists had a problem. They had within the Jewish community itself people fighting against them. The best way to get rid of their own resistance was to force or make it look like Christendom was killing the Jews. And ultimately what would happen from that would be that Christianity would be blamed for killing the Jews. The rest of the Jewish community would move to Palestine afraid of further punishment from Christianity. And so what happened was that they used this very very skillfully to get an enormous number of people to move out of Europe. Now, what we can point to is documents such as the transfer agreement. Did you do any work at all on the transfer agreement?
Are you talking about the agreement between Hitler and the Zionists?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a book out there called 51 Documents, and it shows all the documents between the two. And I think that the deal was going quite well in the early 30s and what have you. There was an agreement where Jews could leave Germany, provided that they went to Israel, and they could take all their wealth with them. There was a lot of problem with that. They could leave peacefully so long as they went to Israel, or what was then Palestine. What actually happened was Hitler then wanted to send some to Madagascar, and the Zionists didn't want that, and that seems to be the trigger where they fell out. Now, there's trying to uncover the riddle of Hitler is something that we can't discuss. I've heard people like Eustace Mullins say that he'd done research where Hitler was actually killed in about 1936 and replaced with a double, and then all this sort of thing happened. There's been another book written called Adolf Hitler, Father of Israel. Without Hitler there would be no Israel, because there wouldn't have been this amount of Jews going over to that area. But certainly there's a lot of the evidence is there clearly that at some point there was a deal between Adolf Hitler and Zionists to actually move the population out into Israel. And at the time of the Second World War, Zionists, there was a prominent one who said that one cow in Israel is worth more than all the Jews in Poland. So what he was basically saying was, unless the Jews want to come to Israel, they're not worth anything.
Well, that's right. And many of the Jews that tried to balk and stop the migration were actually put into concentration camps or work camps, if you will, and they were in many instances starved to death or worked to death. The fact of the matter is that their goal was to get rid of their opposition and also found Israel. So this group of Zionists have no love for the true Jewish people, and in fact the Torah Jews who have been the main victims, and the Semitic Jews who have been the main victims of these people, in many instances today have bought the lie of Zionism, because the Zionists control the flow of information about Judaism today. And this is where the problem comes. You know, when people call me a racist or an anti-Semite, have you ever known that charge to hold any water, Andrew?
Oh, absolutely not, Darren. And I know that you know, you've discussed this issue with me, and you certainly aren't either of those things. I think that what you've said is correct, and we kind of explained it in our discussion just then. Basically, they worked hard to wipe out any Jews that were opposed to Zionism, and so that now, unfortunately, it does appear that it's more the majority than the minority that follow this group, but a lot of that might be out of fear. They feel they have to stand with these people because, you know, they've been wiped out by Christians and wiped out by this, that and the other, and kicked out of every country and things like that. But the reason that these things have always happened has been of, you know, practices through history, and this group have always been involved in those practices.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we take a look at what's happening with this Rothschild family now, let's move it up to since the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, bringing us into today. What have they been investing in? Because what we have found is throughout the 20th century, from 1900 on, they were heavily involved in medical research and experimenting on human beings, viral research, genetic coding, and also bioweaponry and weather control. They've invested in the means of atomic weaponry. You can take a look at most of the people controlling the American Atomic Energy Commission, all Zionist Jews. the people who developed it, Zionist Jews. It's unbelievable when you take a look at the facts, but almost to a man, these people are in the throughout this last century have been involved in the sciences now, using technology to do the final destruction of the human family.
Well, indeed, and it was actually an Oppenheimer that was responsible for the development of the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
When it went off in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, he said, I am become death, I am the destroyer. My main, you touched on a lot of different areas there, but for me, the main thing that they've got hold of in the 20th century, there's two things. Technology has made the world become global, and so you can have fewer and fewer companies that are essentially giant corporations, so you've got fewer things to control. But what they've used is the media. They have the control of the money, and having the control of the money, they could pretty much buy what they wanted. But the key that's really pushed this to the precipice we stand on today is their control of the media, because they control all the information that we receive, and it's only a few independent organizations, and they're being swallowed up on a daily basis, that can give us any alternative to this Zionist news bent.
Well, this is exactly why CII has been attacked for the truth that I try to tell, simply because there are so few voices out there today who are willing to plumb the depths of this crime gang and get away with it, in fact. But let's go on into the 70s and 80s. We've got a group of foot soldiers from this Zionist bent. They call them neocons, who have ensconced themselves into the American leadership and had them do their bidding for the last 30, 40 years. In the process, they're destroying America. They've destroyed the Constitution. They've destroyed freedom. They have militarized the country. They have dumbed the population down to a point where, every one of them needs a dribble cup off their lip because they're so stupid. Media and drugs and aspartame and fluoride, these people don't have a shot at it. I mean, they're a mess.
Well, I agree, and I think that the interesting thing about the neocons is they essentially started off with these Zionists, or prior to be called Zionists, because I think the Zionist term was only really coined after the Zionist Congress, and I think that was a good 10 years after that. But basically, they started off as Democrats, and they brought a lot of Jewish immigrants over in the early part of last century to America and got them to register as Democrats. But because they've got control of both parties, it doesn't really matter which party gets in charge. They'll flood them with these people and show them as to be opposing one another, but both parties are flooded with these people, and as you said, the high percentage we've got in George Bush's government and what have you, and you see there's no strong party that I'm aware of in Britain or America that are not lapdogs for Israel. Both opposing parties absolutely love Israel and dote on Israel, and Israel can do no wrong. And that's, and when you see all the crimes there, it's the evidence is there to see that these people are in control.
Well, and you take a look at the mineral wealth and the control of South Africa. It doesn't matter if you look at France. It doesn't matter if you look even at Mr. Putin, who's working with the Chabad Lubavitch. The Lubavitchers are behind Putin, along with a guy named Leveny, Medvedev is a Jewish president now. I mean, there's no place on earth that you can't see the hand of this some would call it an invisible hand of world Zionism pulling all the strings.
Well, look at an example of, we're nearly 2 years ago now, the Lebanon conflict, and they literally, destroyed so much infrastructure of that country, and there was no outcry about it at all. Israel's always right. I think they insinuated a couple of their soldiers were captured, and as a result they, went in and destroyed that country. And there's no outcry. There's no, be careful of these civilians or what have you. It's always Israel is right and everyone else is wrong. Well, since Israel's been there, there's been nothing but problems in the Middle East, but I'm not aware of any problems on that scale until Israel was there.
Well, and by extension, what the Americans are doing at their orders to Iraq and to what they've done in Morocco through the control of their king and through the control of Jordan and the Masonic connections of King Hussein and now his son Abdullah. You know, Saudi Arabian control and the symbiotic relationship between these crime waves and oil money. It's amazing how deep and however omnipresent this group has got itself to be today in our world. We're on the precipice now, though, Andrew, of a complete and utter failure of every system in the world.
Well, I agree, and it's only the word that we can say to try and get this out to people and encourage people to do their own research. I don't want people to believe everything I say without them researching the aspects of what I say, which is exactly how this book came about. I used to listen to interviews that you did, I would do my own research, and I would come to, in a lot of the cases, a similar conclusion to what you had, and that would be after I looked at various different documents on what had been said, and there'd be some documents that would conflict with others, but in the end, you gradually get a feel for what's going on, and it becomes easier and easier to find out the true history, if you like, of the world. And it's only by getting this message out that we can wake people up and we can turn around and say no to these people, because at the moment, as you said, people are more interested in the drugs, and they'll get up and the first thing they'll do if they buy a newspaper is read the sports pages, and when you've got this as the majority of society in the world, then you've got no hope against these people. They've got the thing all tied up.
Well, you know, I remember when you started following the things I was saying. I mean, a lot of people said that I was crazy, that these things that I was coming up with 4 or 5 years ago were I was out of my mind. Anybody who said that is an anti-Semite. And, of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. I have experiences in my life of generosity, of workaday Jewish people when I was growing up in a small town, or I saw people when I was going to college. I went to university in New York City, so, the idea that I'm against Jewish people is nonsense. I'm not against Islam. I'm not against Christianity. I'm not against Buddhism. I'm not against anybody who wants the best for their families and cares about their neighbor and their society and can go forward in their lives working to make it a better world. This is not the case with this group that you have coined and that the Bible has coined, the synagogue of Satan. Do you believe there is a spiritual component to this group?
I believe that they think there is. It's difficult to know, when we talk about this Zionist group, if their motivation is satanic or if their motivation is money, but then it is said that money is the root of all evil, so whether they have a spiritual belief or not, the way that they practice is evil in itself, and as a result, I think that you could say that whether they feel it or not, then the term satanic would certainly fit them.
Well, the Lubavitch seems to be a front runner, and they're spreading their tentacles worldwide, and the Lubavitch has a huge investment coming from the Zionist community to do their expansion. They're in China, they're in Russia, they're across the United States in every major city. I'm sure if you look in large cities across Africa, you'll find any major city will have a Lubavitch outpost. It looks like they're trying to set up their own spiritual side of things along with this financial and media crime gang as well. And all of that can be rooted back to the elite group of people we've discussed tonight. Are you okay with that statement?
I am, Darrell, and as you said about China, I think that you mentioned on a show, I think it was a couple of years ago, that the first foreign bank set up in China was the Rothschild Bank only a couple of years ago.
That's right. They were given the right to trade from outside China on things inside China, which was the first bank to be permitted to do that, was of course, Lazard Frere, which is their French Rothschild banking arm. They also own BNP Paribas. They have a major interest in all of the nuclear industry in France. they're the people behind proliferation of nuclear power throughout the world, which, of course, everyone knows you can't live with the waste material coming out of that system. It's a horrible idea. It always has been. One has to wonder if we're going to win against them. But you know something? I've come to the conclusion, Andrew, I think as you have, that if we don't try, I couldn't live with myself if I didn't try to stop this. Knowing what I know, I am bound to the knowledge I have found to try and stop it. And I know I'll let you speak for yourself, but I think you feel the same way, don't you?
I do. I think that after I've done my book, I've not been as involved. You fight this fight on a daily basis. I'm always happy to do, you know, any show with you that you like me to do to help get this word out. But the work that you've done and the continual work you do on a daily basis to expose this group helps educate me while I've sat back a bit after I've done my book and different things with that, and trying to promote that to get the kind of the research out that I've done, and you kind of keep it up to date with what's going on in the world at the moment. And I agree with you. I think that my attitude is similar in the sense that, knowing what I know, a lot of the time I wish I didn't know what I know, because I haven't been able to do a lot with it. I haven't seen any change happen with it, but all you can do, or all I found I can do, is literally try and get the word out as much as possible, and hopefully more and more people will wake up. And I'd like to thank the listeners for listening today. Whilst the message that I've told may be upsetting, I hope that it is educational, and I hope it spurs people to do their own research and come to what I believe will be similar conclusions, because I was meticulous in my research, and the book has not really been challenged to this date.
Well, you want to give the listeners how they can get your book, and what method they could use to get it?
Yeah, well, firstly, the book is up in 10 segments on Daryl's site for free, and there's accompanying interviews with it. Daryl's site is www.iamthewitness.com. Alternatively, if they want a signed copy of the book, they can get it from me. I have a website called www.thesynagogueofsatan.com. There is a PayPal button on there. It's £12, and that includes airmail, postage to anywhere in the world, so wherever you are in the world, you should get it within 10 days. And finally, you can also get it from, that will go out signed, by the way, so if it's for somebody else as a gift, then please send me an email with your order, or put in the order who you want it to be signed to, and I'll do that. And finally, you can always go to one of the Amazon sites that carry the book, like Amazon.com or what have you, and you can get it that way.
Well, Andrew, as always, every time we talk, whether it be on radio or privately, I enjoy hearing your voice. You're a friend. You've been one of the rare people to sit at my dinner table and share and break bread with my family, and I will always cherish the time we've spent together, and the work we've done together has actually changed a lot of people's thinking, because once they look into these facts along with us, you can't come to any conclusion but the same ones we did. Is that not so?
Well, this is exactly why I caveat what I say. I want people to look into it for themselves. I don't want them to believe everything that I've written, because then if they get challenged on it, all they'll say is, well, this guy wrote this. But I want them to have the confidence to look into it for themselves, to take the time for themselves, and they will find the story, and they will also find other aspects to the story that I didn't know about. I mean, I'm still learning new things every day, and I think to myself, I wish I'd put that in the book, or I wish I'd put that in the book. But it got to a stage where it was a reasonable length, 300 pages. It was there that someone could read. I didn't want it to be too long, and I wanted it so that it would be an introduction to what's going on. And I do get good emails from people who alert me to different things going on in the world, and that helps me learn. Your broadcaster as well, and I think that's the important thing we need to do here. We need to learn for ourselves.
Well, again, Andrew, thank you very much for coming on this evening, and take care of yourself. Get yourself, gird your loins, my friend. We have a tough time financially on our horizon, and we have many other problems to solve, and I know that you're one of the people that wants to make things better in this world, so I'll let you go out and do that right now, and thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Dale. All the very best.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harrington Hitchcock, a great friend and a wonderful researcher, honest man. Please take heed to the facts that he shared tonight. They are provable. In the meantime, know one thing, ladies and gentlemen. I am a man of honor, and I work hard here at trying to present to you the things as I find them, the truth as I discover it. Until the next time, please take care of your families. They are in need of moral support in these coming days, and the closer you are to those around you, for the people in Islam during Ramadan, begin to talk to other people about these facts and share with them the idea that we can make this a better world if we come together as one. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well. Bye-bye now.